Chapter 23. Vergere was a model of innocence for the next 8 days, during which time Luke and Mara kept track of her when she wasn't with Silgal or other Jedi. During that time, Luke's lobbying efforts were nothing but frustration. Cal listened politely to his arguments, but didn't change his mind. On the morning of the 9th day, New Republic security burst down the door and swept through the apartment. Diff Scour had come in person, flinty eyes hard in his gaunt face. "The Chief of State wants to see you," he told Luke. His eyes flicked to Mara. "And Mara may come as well." Cal Umas was in his office. He was unshaven and disheveled and had clearly just risen from bed. As Diff Scour marched Luke and Mara into the office, Cal stared for a moment at a fragrant, fruit-filled pastry that had been provided for his breakfast, and then with a look of disgust swept it from his desk. He looked at Luke with eyes of stone. "Where's Vergere?" "We saw her tonight in her room," Luke said, "just before bed."
"She's not in her room now," Cal said. "We don't know where she is."
Luke took a deep breath.
"What has she done?"
"As if you didn't know."
Diff Scour breathed from behind Luke's shoulder.
"Vergere has sabotaged Alpha Red," Cal said.
Luke's mouth went dry.
"Sabotaged it how?"
"The Alpha Red team was in the process of moving to the Nebulon B cruiser in orbit. Somehow Vergere got on board in the confusion. She's wiped the records, and somehow she's altered the weapon."
"Altered?"
Luke echoed.
"Rendered it ineffective. We don't know how."
Through her tears, Luke thought, she could modify the weapon at the molecular level.
"And she's rendered 3 of my security guards unconscious," Diff Scour added.
Mara turned to him. "They're all right?"
"They will be."
Cal's eyes bored into Luke.
"So where is she?"
"I don't know." Truthfully.
"Where would she run to?"
"Back to the Vong, of course," Diff Scour said. "She's been working for them all along."
I don't think so," Luke said. "I think Vergere is entirely on her own."
"She doesn't owe the Yuuzhan Vong her allegiance any more than we do," Mara added. "She's a servant of the Old Republic, not the new."
"So tell us why the Old Republic wants the Yuuzhan Vong to win the war,"
Diff Scour shouted.
"She doesn't," Luke said. "She just doesn't want an atrocity like Alpha Red to be unleashed."
"And who told her about the atrocity then?"
Cal's voice was cold. "Who broke security?" Luke gathered himself for the admission, but Mara forestalled him.
"We didn't tell her," she said. "If she found out, she found out on her own."
"True enough," Luke decided.
"But how?" Scour demanded. "You had no documents to take home, no recordings. Unless,"
his voice turned suspicious,
"you surreptitiously made one."
"I didn't," Luke said. Cal looked at him for a long moment, then looked down at his desk.
"That's what Vergere herself confirmed."
He scratched his bristly chin.
"She left a note saying that something a scientist said made her suspicious, and that she followed up her suspicions. She specifically exonerated you."
"But then she would," Scour said, "especially if she did this under your orders."
"I gave no orders," Luke said.
He felt helpless under this kind of suspicion. There was no way to prove himself innocent. He looked at Cal.
"I haven't given up trying to talk you out of it."
"Sir,"
Diff Scour spoke to Cal, "if she goes back to the Vong with Alpha Red, then the New Republic is in jeopardy. The enemy will know our capabilities, and they'll have to do whatever they can to destroy us before we can revive the Alpha Red project."
"The Skywalkers think she won't go to the Yuuzhan Vong," Cal said.
"They've been wrong up until now," Scour said, "and in any case we can't afford to take the chance."
"True."
Cal's eyes moved restlessly over his desk.
All right, then. He looked at Scour. You need to reestablish Alpha Red at a safer location, and have the team duplicate their original work. That will take how long?
At least 3 months, probably 4.
Cal nodded.
He turned to Luke.
We'll move on Akbar's plan immediately. If the Vong are responding to Akbar's moves, then maybe they won't have time to kill the rest of us.
Yes, sir, Luke said. His mind buzzed with calculation. It would be 3 or 4 months before Alpha Red was unleashed. That meant Luke had 3 months to win the war. If the enemy were on the edge of defeat, then perhaps Cal wouldn't feel it necessary to wipe the Yuuzhan Vong from existence. The Jedi were his eyes and ears. Formations hovered in Jason's mind, lumbering transports, weapon-studded capital ships, racing squadrons of starfighters. It was a fleet exercise, featuring a force aided by the Jedi meld against a superior force unaided by the Jedi. The force glowed in Jason like a flame, and he maneuvered the friendly squadrons like elements in a gigantic puzzle, trying to sense what would happen many moves in advance. The opposing fleet made its move. As the fleets clashed, powered down lasers flashing as computers launched simulated missiles, the picture in Jason's head seemed to expand. Information arriving in larger and larger bundles until he strained to keep up with it all. He felt sweat trickle down the bridge of his nose. The picture deteriorated into frantic, busy hash, punctuated only rarely by moments of clarity. The meld always broke down when the situation grew too complex. Jason could contain and control a large number of Jedi, like those engaged on the raid at Duro, but beyond that his abilities faded. This was frustrating because he always sensed that comprehension was possible, if just beyond his reach. If only there were more Jedi in the link. If only he were more clever. Still, his preliminary maneuvering had put the fleet in good shape, and as the battle went on, he was able to achieve some flashes of insight that made sense out of the chaos. When the exercise ended, the opposition's advantage in numbers had been annulled, and the exchange of simulated casualties had favored Jason's force.
"Try not to get me killed next time, Solo," Corran Horn, whose commitment to the fight had been mistimed, sent a dour message over the comlink.
Jason sent an apology. He had to get better at this. Next time the missiles wouldn't be simulated.
"Splendid work, Jason."
Out of the force and on Rall Roost's tactical command center, Admiral Creefe's cream-colored body bounced on the balls of his feet.
"Next battle we're going to hammer them."
The Bothan punched his palm by way of emphasis. "I hope so," Jason said. He had to get better at this. Too many people were counting on him. It had become a custom for the Jedi to dine together after the exercise. They reviewed the maneuvers, the way the meld had worked or failed to work, and suggested improvements. After the group broke up, Jason sought out Tahiri Vela.
"You're doing well?" he asked.
She frowned. "I'm working hard." It was the truth. Since Anakin's death, she had grown serious, almost grim in the way that she pursued her goals, a considerable change from the impetuous, fiery girl Jason remembered from the Jedi Academy.
"I wonder if I might ask you a question," Jason said.
"Of course."
"I wonder if, since you came back from capture, whether you've ever felt the ability to, sense the Yuuzhan Vong?"
Tahiri was startled.
"No. Why do you ask?"
She brushed the blonde hair from her face. Jason explained about his own capture, and how the implanted slave seed had given him the ability to connect telepathically with the Yuuzhan Vong. Tahiri shivered.
"No, I've never experienced that, and I'm glad. That must be awful."
"It's all right. It's helped me understand them."
He looked at her. and it can be useful in detecting the enemy and in controlling their bioweapons.
Jason hesitated. The truth is, I was wondering if it might be possible to teach the Vong sense to someone else.
Tahiri took a step back, her eyes widening.
And you want to see if I can contact the Yuuzhan Vong through the Force?
No, not through the Force. It's a different sort of bond.
Through their... her face twisted. Slave implants.
Yes.
You know that I hate them.
Her eyes burnt fiercely into Jason's.
I hate them. I know I'm a Jedi and I'm not supposed to hate anyone, but I can't help it. Not after what they've done.
Jason nodded. I understand. I don't want to put you through anything that will make you uncomfortable or that will bring back bad memories.
All right, then. She nodded. I'm sorry, Jason.
That's fine.
Tahiri began to walk away, and then she hesitated and turned. Is it important? She asked.
I can't say, Jason said, but it will help you understand the Yuuzhan Vong. And perhaps when you understand them, you won't hate them so much.
I want to hate them.
Her lips pressed together in a firm, defiant line. It takes a lot of energy to hate, Jason said. You might have other uses for that energy, Tahiri.
Again she hesitated. All right, she said finally. I'll give it a try.
They went to Jason's small cabin, sat in meditation posture on the floor, and touched hands. He sensed Tahiri's expanding Force awareness, and he said,
No, not the Force. This power comes from somewhere else.
Tahiri's mouth curled in annoyance.
What do I do, then?
Try to look into... into an empty place where the slave implants were. I'll try to guide you. Jason could find the empty place himself, and he could feel, at the edge of his awareness, the world brain he had left behind on Coruscant. He tried to build a bridge between Tahiri and the Duryam, but he couldn't seem to bring the two closer together. And he could sense Tahiri's growing frustration. The problem was that there weren't any Yuuzhan Vong nearby. If there were, perhaps Tahiri wouldn't have such a hard time.
I'm sort of glad it didn't work, Tahiri said afterward.
Would you mind trying again later?
She grimaced. I suppose we could try, but I'm not looking forward to it.
After she'd left, Jason had begun to record a holovid letter to his parents when he realized he wasn't alone. Not even in his own mind. Verger? He probed. In return, Jason received impressions, pictures of a green treetop landscape that he had recognized as Kashyyyk, and a strong, nonverbal command to come to the planet. And this was followed by an equally powerful compulsion to silence.
Secret meeting? Jason sent.
There was no reply. Jason received permission to leave Ral Roost from the officer of the deck and took his X-wing to the surface, homing on Verger's presence in the Force. She had chosen a small, remote island for the meeting place. No Wookiees lived there, but the lower depths of the Roshir Forest was filled with the usual deadly native life forms. The meeting place was marked by an old four-passenger Trilon shuttle perched at a dangerous angle in the uppermost branches of one of the Roshir trees. Jason floated the X-wing toward it on his repulsor lifts and carefully dropped the starfighter onto an interwoven net of branches. As he shut off the repulsor lifts and let the branches take the fighter's weight, he was surprised by the sight of a 4-meter-long, many-toothed serpent flying past his canopy.
Their instinct is to eat birds, Verger explained as Jason climbed out of the cockpit and lowered himself to one of the massive Roshir limbs. I try to discourage them, but they are unintelligent and thus persistent.
As Verger spoke, another larger snake was torn free in a shower of green foliage from an overhanging limb and went whipping through the air and over the green horizon.
If I throw them into the sea,
Vergere said. It delays their return, but they do come back.
The branch swayed under Jason's feet. It was wide as a highway, but the motion was unsettling.
"Can't you make yourself small?" he asked. "They don't detect me in the Force. I think they smell me."
"I'm good with animals. Let me try."
He expanded his awareness of the Force to include the fauna of the treetops and detected the primitive, purposeful minds of several of the snakes, all of them stalking through the foliage toward Vergere. Jason tried turning off the instinct to hunt, but the compulsion was hardwired into them, and he failed. Then he suggested to them that better, more appetizing food was to be found elsewhere, and they turned away in search of it.
"Nicely done," Vergere said, "and it is a tactic that can be applied to species other than snakes."
Jason looked at her. "Why are you here?"
Vergere's feathery antennae crooked forward and back, as if scanning the air for invaders.
"I sense no other presence," she said.
"Did you run away? Is Neely Kirka after you?"
"Neely Kirka and many others.
Your Master Skywalker among them, I think."
Jason took a deep breath. He squatted on his heels on the wide branch and said,
"You'd better tell me."
Vergere told her story. Jason was horrified, not simply because Alpha Red was a weapon for mass murder, but because, thanks to the slave seed tendrils coiled about his nerves, he now possessed an empathy for the Yuuzhan Vong. It was not only the human part of his mind that quailed at this revelation, but the part that understood the enemy.
Vergere looked at him. "I have given the Jedi only a few months to respond to this horror," she said.
"They can rebuild the weapon?"
"Of course."
He shrugged helplessly. "What should I do?"
"I can't advise you."
"Should I tell people?"
"We could put pressure on the government, but that would tell the Yuuzhan Vong and—" He shrank before the consequences of that decision, the Yuuzhan Vong realizing that they were in a war of extinction rather than a war of conquest.
Her dark, tilted eyes gazed into his.
"Since I first met you, I have had an intuition that you are in some way bound up with the fate of the Yuuzhan Vong. Perhaps this is the moment I have been anticipating."
Jason looked at her in surprise. "The fate of the Yuuzhan Vong? Is that why you've taken such an interest in me?"
Her eyes narrowed. "Beyond any other interest I would have taken in a Jedi in distress, yes."
He rose to his feet. The huge branch swayed beneath him as a breeze ruffled the leaves.
"What are you going to do?" he asked.
Her wide mouth twisted in thought.
"There isn't a general search for me, or you'd have heard. That means that only the intelligence people will be looking for me, which will make it easier to evade them."
She craned her long neck to look at her shuttle.
"My craft came to Mon Calamari with a family of refugees, who sold it to buy food. Sooner or later the dealer to whom they sold it will notice that it's missing from its orbit, and then there'll be a search. But that won't matter. The hyperdrive engines are ready to give up the ghost, and I'll be lucky to get out of the Kashi-Eek system."
She turned to Jason.
"Can you give me a ride in your fighter?"
"Certainly, but to where?"
"To your ship, perhaps."
He blinked at her.
"It's an assault cruiser," he said. "It's got over 1,000 crew."
"It's easy to pass as one among thousands, yes?"
Vergere smiled.
"And I would be less conspicuous in a uniform, no?"
"No," Jason said.
He decided to pass over the unlikely chance that he'd find a uniform that would fit Vergere.
"Most of the crew are Bothans. The starfighter pilots are from all over, but there aren't that many of them, and
no doubt there are supply vessels coming on and off the ship all the time,"
Vergere said.
"Cargo coming on and off, and being placed in storage, and dispatch boats, and shuttles to other ships. Hundreds of escape pods.
With all that confusion, surely one single individual could find a way off the ship and to safety. She smiled. I am very good at being invisible. Jason sighed. He sensed an inevitability in the offing. Let's hope there aren't any big snakes aboard, he said. I'm glad to know that creepy little bird is gone, Han said. It was all I could do, not to wring her neck for what she did to Jason. He looked around. Where did Verger go to anyway? I'm not sure, Luke said. He quelled the uneasiness in his mind and asked Han and Leia to sit. The pair took the seats offered and then the drinks that Mara brought into the room. Mara took her own drink and sat on the sofa next to Luke. He put his arm around her. I wanted to tell you that I'll be leaving for a while, Luke said. I'm going across the galaxy to Fondor, and I'm not sure when I'll be back. Leia looked at him. Is it something you can talk about? I'm going to Garmbel Iblis, Luke said. He commands at Fondor, and since the fall of Coruscant he's been operating independently of Sin Sov and the military. Just like he did in the Rebellion, Han said. Bel Iblis likes running his own show. When he was given orders, at first he responded that the situation in his sector was different than the Supreme Commander thought, and therefore he declined to carry them out. Lately he hasn't been responding to orders at all. You brought him into the fold once before, Leia said. I guess Cal thinks you can do it again. It hasn't been important until now, Luke said. Bel Iblis has been doing more or less what he should have been doing anyway, defending his sector and harassing the enemy. But now Akbar has a plan to win the war, and we need to know whether Bel Iblis will be in at the finish. Leia considered the question. He'll be in. He's headstrong and independent, but he'll be on the right side when it counts. I hope so, Mara said. I'd hate for Luke to make that long trip for nothing. Leia gave Luke a curious look. This mission is taking you away from the Jedi... I mean, the High Council. Can you be absent for such a long time? I'll give my proxy to Silgal, Luke said. She'll speak and vote for me and for Saba, who gave me her proxy when she joined. The strain between Luke and Cal hadn't affected the running of the High Council. Cal seemed perfectly friendly, if a bit reserved. But he no longer shared confidential information with Luke. If there were military or political secrets that Luke wasn't already a part of, then they were never mentioned in Luke's presence. The trust was gone. Luke didn't know whether he would ever win it back. Luke, for his part, still had hopes of convincing Cal not to use Alpha Red at all. But if necessary, Luke would poll the other Jedi members privately. The influence of the Council as a whole might tip the balance against Diff Scour and his plan. Together they might be able to take a principled stand against the use of the weapon. But that was for the future. For now, Luke was dedicated to making sure that Akbar's plan was carried out. If the Yuuzhan Vong were defeated, then the arguments against Alpha Red would bear all that much more weight. Luke turned to Han. Speaking of Akbar, he said, he asked me if you'd do him a favor. Ice rang in Han's glass as he drained it. Anything, he said. He'd like you to resume your military rank and take command of a squadron. Han placed his glass firmly on the table next to his seat. You know, I never did take to the military, he said, and the military never took to me. If Akbar just wants to make both me and the fleet miserable, he'd like you to take command of the squadron contributed by the Smugglers' Alliance, Luke said. Talon Card, Booster Tarek, and the Errant Venture. They're a hard bunch, anarchic and rebellious and undisciplined. The ships are a heterogeneous jumble, and any tactics would have to be improvised by the squadron commander. Leia, a little grim, turned to her husband. I'd use the word never if I were you. Lando's part of it, too, Luke added. You know he'd make mincemeat out of a regular fleet officer. Anyone who could control that bunch would have to be as rough as they are, and as experienced. The commander would have to be able to fly the pants off any of them, and whip 50 times his weight in angry crate dragons. Leia finished. She looked at Han.
You see what my brother's trying to do, don't you? She said. He's trying to flatter you into taking this job. He's trying to tell you that only Han Solo could possibly be tough enough for this assignment.
Han smiled. He's right, of course, he said. But the word never is still on the tip of my tongue. Luke sighed. You're going to force me to fight dirty, he said. I really didn't want to do this. Han laughed. Hit me with your best shot. Luke made an apologetic gesture. During the upcoming operation, the Smugglers Alliance squadron will be in support of Admiral Kreefe's fleet, which includes your children. Sorry.
Han looked stricken. Leia narrowed her eyes and glared at her brother. That is really underhanded, Luke, she said.
I know, Luke said.
We had both gotten out. We were going to have time together. We were going to be happy, sorry. And now,
she clenched her fists,
now it's all up to us again, isn't it?
Luke smiled. The fate of the galaxy may well rest in your hands. Yes. It's unfair, but that's the way it is. Leia raised a fist.
When this is over, she said, remind me to hit you.
Luke raised his hands peaceably. Kip's first in line, he said. But when this is over, take all the shots you want. Jason was returning from Kashyyyk to the Rawl Roost when he was calmed by Kip Duran. I need all Jedi on Moon Adapine for a meeting. It's urgent.
Can I wash and change first? Jason asked. I've been down on Kashyyyk, and I'm kind of a mess.
I said urgent, Kip snapped. We need you now. Jason considered the small figure of Vergere, who was crammed into the cockpit on his lap. Better make yourself very small, he thought.
Acknowledged, he said.
Vergere managed to avoid discovery when Jason landed his X-Wing in the cruiser's capacious docking bays. She remained in the cockpit, ducking down out of sight as he dropped to the deck and went in search of his fellow Jedi. Kip, seated at the end of one of the mess tables, had assembled the other Jedi in a corner of the officer's mess. Jason entered cautiously and saw Corran Horn, along with Jaina, Tisar, Lobaka, and the other newly made Jedi. As he entered, Saba and her squadron of wild knights turned to stare at him with glittering reptilian eyes. Jason tried to calm the panic that fluttered in his ribcage and said,
"What's going on?"
Kip looked at him.
"I have an urgent message from Master Skywalker. He said that Vergere has run away from Mon Calamari, and if we see her, we're to detain her and take her to Mon Calamari or to New Republic Intelligence."
Even though he'd known approximately what the message would contain, still Jason felt an unpleasant surge of emotion at Kip's words. In the last few months, Jason had become an expert at deception. He'd lied to the Yuuzhan Vong, and he'd lied to Ganner Rysode in order to capture him for the enemy. But lying to an entire room of Jedi, Jedi alongside of whom he'd been fighting for the last months, was a new ordeal.
"Vergere," he said, calming himself. "What's she done?"
Master Skywalker didn't say. "But it has to be important, because Vergere is now our number one priority. If we have any notion where she might be, we're to drop everything and go in search of her. But we're not to search alone. Vergere is to be considered dangerous, and should be apprehended by Jedi working as teams."
Saba 17 raised a hand. "We are not to break into packs and search the galaxy now, are we?"
"No, we're to stay with the fleet until we hear from Vergere or until we hear of her. And then we're to get her secured and back where she belongs."
He turned his eyes to Jason, and Jason felt a cold hand brush his spine.
"You're closer to her than anyone here," Kip said. "Master Skywalker thought she might try to contact you."
"She'd have to be out of her mind to come to Kashyyyk,"
Jason said with perfect truth. There are too many Jedi here.
Right, Kip said, though Jason still sensed his suspicion.
Kip rose from the table. It's unlikely that we'll see her. We're all moving out anyway.
Jason stood quietly, motionless on the deck.
Moving out? Right, brother, Jaina said. We're on continual alert. Something big's happening. The whole fleet's getting ready to move.
Rumor says it's the Core, Coronhorn said. But we know how accurate rumor's been in this war.
Jaina, on her way out of the meeting, slapped Jason on the shoulder.
See you when we get there, she said.
Wherever there is, Jason thought.
And wondered, now that the whole fleet was on alert, how he was going to get Vergere off his ship.